Welcome! Round two of the World Cup is almost over and there is still a lot to play for. Toni Kroos is the most popular person in Germany right now after his stoppage time winner against Sweden. But how did Germany get so close to elimination? Did Joachim Löw pick the right team? Did Jerome Boateng almost cost them the game? Does Germany need 11 Marco Reuses? We break it all down. This is the World Cup from the Tribuna. Davis Van Opdorp here with Matt Ford after a cracking game between Germany and Sweden. Matt, when that Toni Kroos goal went in, what were you thinking?
50-50, really. Part of it was surprise because I thought the chance had gone, especially after Julian Brandt's shot once again came back off the post, as it did against Mexico. There's been a second Marco Reus chance where we tried to flick it and it hadn't come off either. And yeah, I did think the chance had gone with Germany down to 10 men. On the other hand, when a shot comes from Toni Kroos' boot, you're not going to be surprised when it flies into the back of the net like that. It was an absolutely outstanding piece of skill. By all accounts, Mats Hummels had been on the touchline shouting, cross it, put it in the box. But Kroos hadn't heard him, or at least had ignored him. I also read this morning that the initial decision was for Reus to take it. But then the two of them decided that, no, the angle was a little bit too narrow. So they reached a compromise whereby Kroos would roll the ball to Reus just to improve that angle by that couple of degrees to make it an ideal shooting position for Toni Kroos. What an outstanding finish, and you could tell how much it meant to him afterwards, pumping his chest, running towards the German fans in the corner. I think when the full-time whistle then blew, he was punching the floor. And in his interview afterwards, he came out with a little comment, I think directed probably at the media and the press, saying, yeah, there are a lot of people at home who I think would have been happy if we'd have gone out, but we're not going to make it so easy for them. So it really was an incredible moment of vindication, of almost rebirth for Germany and Toni Kroos personally as well.
This was probably, I think, the longest week for Germany and Germany fans. I mean, it had been 6 days since they had lost to Mexico, and then they had another 90 minutes of just, Could it actually be the case that Germany were not going to advance out of the group stage?
I think for anyone who subscribes to the stereotypes that Germans approach business, football, life, whatever, in a very structured and organized manner, would have been disappointed over the last week. I wrote that the column inches written about the faults from the Mexico game would have stretched all the way to Sochi. It's been utter chaos, hasn't it, for the past week? Everything's been blamed. The training camp, Löw, the tactics, the players, you name it, it's been blamed.
The DFB too.
And well, after the first 10 minutes where Germany actually started quite well, a lot of those same errors did seem to come back to haunt Germany again, didn't they? Although ultimately, yeah, Löw did make the changes which we expected, albeit the Sebastian Rudi change is probably slightly less expected. I'm not sure what Ilkay Gundogan will be thinking. I'm not sure what he needs to do to get a game. But I think it was validated, especially in the first 10-15 minutes. But then, of course, yeah, as we saw, some of the old errors from the Mexico game raised their heads again, didn't they?
Yeah, it's fitting that Toni Kroos and Marco Reus were over the ball to take that free kick, because they were arguably the main reasons why Germany still has a chance to do something in this World Cup.
Well, they were the reason, in the person of Marco Reus, they were the reason why Germany started that game so well. I think in the first 11 minutes, they recorded 122 passes to Sweden's six,
yeah,
which was an absolutely ridiculous statistic
that popped up. That stat came out after like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was sitting, I was at a birthday party, at a dinner party, and I was sitting watching the game on my phone, and I had to share that with the table, because it was just utterly ridiculous.
So much of it came through Marco Reus. He was acting as a pivot on the left and on the right, and setting up those attacks. Whether it was playing in Werner towards the byline on one side or Draxler on the other side, a lot of it was coming from Marco Reus, and Germany needed that, because Sweden had set up in a very, very solid 4-4-2. I think at times it was more of a 5-4-1, sat there on the edge of their own box. The sort of a heavyweight you'd ideally want Mesut Özil there picking those the finest of passes, but Marco Reus took over that more than adequately. And they could have taken the lead early on. Timo Werner had a good shot which was blocked. Another effort from Jonas Hector as well was blocked. Had those early chances gone in, we'd have been talking about a different game. However, as it was, the second of those players, Toni Kroos, who was over the ball later, was then responsible for giving the ball away ahead of the first goal, which was totally uncharacteristic, but summed up how Germany just started this World Cup. Not the sort of player you expect to be losing the ball, but yeah, lose it he did, and just as Germany were exposed by Mexico time and time again in that first game, Sweden pounced in a similar manner.
Yeah, I will say, though, I mean, I think one thing that you noticed with Marco Reus in the game instead of Mesut Özil, which we'll get on to it in a second, but is the fact that you could really see at the end of the game that Sweden's midfield was really tiring. Sweden's midfield actually didn't really play that well,
despite having played against 10 men for the final 13 minutes.
I mean, Alvin Ekdal and Sebastian Larsson, they were okay. They didn't. I think we were laughing last week that many were saying that Sweden's creative spark had to come from Alvin Ekdal of all people. But I think you really noticed the fact since Marco Reus was basically running at that defense the entire game, you could tell by the end that Sweden were starting to crack. And that's why from my perspective, I wasn't surprised that those chances were coming in at the 80th plus minute. I thought with 75 minutes, it was different than 75 minutes against Mexico. I think Mexico had the fuel from the crowd, and they even though they were tiring, they definitely still were staying compact and staying. But you could see, like, Sweden were staying compact, but then they were leaving the flanks open. And part of that was because players like Timo Werner and Marco Reus had been running at the defense the entire game.
That's the key difference between those final stages last night against Sweden and the situation in the closing minutes against Mexico. I had the impression against Mexico that as much as the Germans were throwing balls forward, there was no plan to it, and I think that was typified, summed up by the fact that one of the best chances came from a Joshua Kimmich bicycle kick on the penalty spot. I mean, great piece of skill, great piece of improvisation, but what on earth was your fullback doing there with 5 minutes to go? There was absolutely no plan. In contrast, last night, especially after the decision to replace Draxler with Gomez as your number nine up front, which allowed Timo Werner to drift out wide, Germany had a plan and a threat coming from both flanks. I think that worked out really, really well. There was another comment later, I think, again from Mats Hummels, watching it injured, and he spoke afterwards and said, we had the feeling that with Timo Werner in that sort of form on the left, we felt he could beat anyone, so we thought we always had a chance. And so it came. Really, really good setup for Reus's goal, and it fitting, really, that it was Reus with the equaliser and Werner with the setup. Two players who've come into the team and made a genuine difference.
Now, we didn't get on this in the Mexico game, and you said obviously afterwards that we maybe should have, but the fact that Leroy Sané isn't in this team, do you think that this also was the type of game that Leroy Sané could have made a difference?
Arguably, yeah. Leroy Sané's a fantastic player. No one's denying that. I don't even think Joachim Löw would deny that. The lad is an outstanding talent, and yeah, arguably, had someone like him been brought on in the second half last night, would that have made a difference? Yeah, probably. But I don't think any of that changes the initial decision made by Löw. I think we can question Löw for a lot of things, for perhaps over an exaggerated sense of loyalty to his experienced World Cup winners, to perhaps slightly desperate substitutions, as we saw in the Mexico game. To not going for it full throttle at the start last night by starting Gomez, arguably with Werner, perhaps, having two up front. Criticising for a lot of things, but we've discussed it to death when the World Cup squad got announced. The decision to leave Leroy Sané at home had his reasons in that the lad's never played, he's never performed for Germany and doesn't form part of that system. And the players who, well, the changes that Löw was able to make last night, reap their rewards. Julian Brandt was impressive when he came on again. Timo Werner's switch out to the left seemed to work. So I'm not sure we can really say, oh, had Leroy Sané come on, Germany would have won that 3-0 or 3-1, 4-1. No problem.
Well, let's talk about some of the changes, because obviously going into the game, there were, I mean, the two biggest names that weren't on the team sheet were Mesut Özil starting in behind Timo Werner and Sami Khedira sitting in favor of Sebastian Rudi. Now, of course, Jonas Hector came back into the team and Antonio Rudiger was chosen to replace Mats Hummels. But in terms of the whole squad dynamic, I would say that Mesut Özil and Sami Khedira being left out of the team was a huge, brave move made by Joachim Löw. Do you see it the same way?
Huge, yeah. I think, obviously, both big names and both big omissions, but the Sami Khedira omission was probably slightly less surprising given the absolute shock he'd had against
Mexico.
Yeah,
he was really bad. I think that whole week, it kind of set in just how bad he was in that game.
Directly culpable for the goal as well. The Mesut Özil one, again, taken purely from the point of view of the Mexico game, would have, perhaps an understandable decision taken by Löw to bring him out. However, looking at the bigger picture, you know, this is a player who's literally been the first man on the team sheet for almost a decade for Joachim Löw. He's made, I think it was 90 plus appearances for Germany in total, 84, I think, have been starts. And there's not been a Germany tournament game that Özil has not started since 2008. I believe 2010 would have been the first one, so it might have been going back to 2008. That's how important he is. Yeah. Good goals and assist record, and a key member of the team. No matter what is the public perception of him might be outside, he remains a very popular figure within the dressing room. So that was a huge call. Was it perhaps dictated by some of the media coverage this week, which, in my opinion, has drifted at times away from the sporting and away from the tactical, and has at times had a slightly darker social or political tone to it, which I'm not sure if this is the place to get into that. Who knows? I'd be surprised if Joachim Löw and the coaches would have been affected by that sort of reporting. However, the decision was made, and I think it paid off. Royce took on a much more important and influential role. But there was no doubt that Royce would do that. The bigger surprise, of course, was if you're going to take out Khedira, who would be your first choice to replace him?
I would say Rudi.
I think
Rudi would be. I mean, you saw what Rudi did at the Confederations Cup. Rudi also at the end of qualification. I mean, World Cup qualification doesn't mean that much, but in terms of cohesion and being used to the players you're playing next to, Sebastian Rudi and Toni Kroos, I think, played two of the final four World Cup qualifiers next to each other, if I without looking it up. That's a partnership that I think worked, and I think that it's one that was interesting to me, because you by having Rudi in that team, you take the defensive responsibility from Toni Kroos completely away, because Rudi is the best number six Germany has right now. I mean, one could say Julian Weigl is in that conversation, but obviously Julian Weigl is not in the team. But yeah, no, I think that was the right decision. I think if Khedira were to come up for somebody, I would still, even though Gundogan is a bigger name, I think that in that position in front of the back line, I think Rudi plays it better than Gundogan or Kroos would.
I think that's key. I think it's another example of another insight into the way Joachim Löw thinks about his teams and thinks about his squads, similar to the whole Leroy Sané situation. Ilkay Gundogan's a big name, an English champion. He's played a key role for Manchester City all season.
Key role for Borussia Dortmund too.
Yeah. Looking back to it, although Sebastian Rudi, I don't think he'd started a tournament game, had he, unless you count the Confed Cup, and I don't count that. However, Joachim Löw does. So, yeah, what do I know? He made five appearances at the Confed Cup. He was a key part of Germany's qualifying run, and he's obviously a more integrated member of the squad from a footballing and from a tactical point of view, and that's obviously why Löw went for him. And I think we saw that in that opening 20 minutes before he got his bash on the nose and his nosebleed, like you said, it released Kroos, it released Royce, it released Muller from any defensive responsibilities to start dictating those attacks, which really had Sweden on the back foot in the opening stages. As soon as he went off, and you could tell how frustrated he was making his first major tournament start. In his opinion, it was only a nosebleed. However, I think Dr. Hans Müller-Wohlfahrt was with him on the bench saying, look, no, we cannot stop the bleed. And the blood was pouring out of his nose. I think he was using his kit almost as a tissue to soak it all up. The amount of blood was ridiculous for just a bash on the nose. There was no way he could have carried on. And he was so frustrated, launching his kit, punching the bench.
Yeah.
And understandably so. And it had a negative effect for Germany.
I think defensively more than actually in the build-up play.
Precisely because it put more defensive responsibility back on, well, to name one, Toni Kroos. And that's exactly where the Swedish goal came from.
I would even go further. I mean, you saw, Jerome Boateng was very undisciplined from the start. After Sebastian Rudi went off, he had to be, because if he didn't try to make those challenges or make those tackles, you saw what happened when Boateng wasn't on that side of the field. When Ola Toivonen scored his goal, I mean, it was pretty clear that Sebastian Rudi, it was pretty clear to me anyways, that Sebastian Rudi was basically the best protection that Germany had in front of the back line. Yes, and I think it was even clearer especially when he went off. But I want to touch on Özil again real quick, because I don't think that his omission was actually, maybe I'm naive in saying this, but I don't think his omission was anything but in a footballing sense. I think that Löw wanted Germany to play quicker. And I think I think Marco Reus was able to do that. I mean, there's still players on the field, like Joshua Kimmich frustrated me because he would take three touches before he would try to put in a cross. But and Özil is one of those types of two-touch players. And he does play one touch with Arsenal, but when against Mexico, he was playing two touch the entire time, and it was just the ball was just moving too slowly in the final third. And then when you had Marco Reus combining with the other attackers for Germany, I think that's really what made a difference. And so, like I said, I know everything that's going on with the Erdogan picture and everything, but I do genuinely believe that was a footballing decision.
I don't think for a second that Joachim Löw has been influenced by any of the more non-footballing reporting around that. I don't believe that for a second. As unfortunate as some of it has been, of course it was a purely footballing decision. And yeah, I think we saw, especially in the second half, that Germany had that much more pace to the game. It didn't always look like the goal was ultimately going to come, especially because with a lot of the crosses that were going in, the Swedes were just heading them clear. But that's where Germany needed some creativity, and I think especially in the closing stages, when you had Müller, Brandt, Reus and Werner all interchanging, knowing that you had a Mario Gomez in the middle who, you know, again, could, like against Mexico, came very close to scoring against Sweden as well. It was a fantastic save from the goalkeeper. By that point, they seemed to have so much more flexibility, pace and penetration from both sides. And it's no surprise that that's where the equaliser came from, and that's ultimately where the free kick was won and ultimately finished off. So yeah, Löw has been criticised for some of his changes. I thought, especially towards the end of the Mexico game, it looked a little bit desperate, didn't it? I think at one point, didn't he take off Plattenhardt and throw on Brandt up front? I think that, yep, that was one of the changes. It smacked of desperation. Okay, on the one hand, you can say, right, well, okay, you're at a World Cup, you need to get a goal in the last 5 minutes, do whatever you can. It's not desperation, it's just logic. But as I said, they seem to lack a plan. Against Sweden, for the first time at this World Cup for Germany, and in fact, for the first time, even after those five or six friendly performances, which weren't impressive, Germany had a plan, and I think it came off. Having said that, if they revert to the original plan, which seems to be the original plan A of Germany at this World Cup against South Korea, and have similar problems, we'll all forget what happened in the last minute in Sochi. That's not the case.
But. All right, so I think we should spend a couple minutes also on Jerome Boateng, because he was very undisciplined, and there were several times that he nearly cost Germany the game. I want to ask you on that play, on that break forward, did you think that his challenge, did you think his challenge on Marcus Berg was a red card?
At the time, I didn't. I haven't seen the replay. Yeah, he's not gone anywhere near the ball, and he's taken Berg's leg. It's definitely a foul. I think if there isn't the contact with Berg's leg, then he has a much easier shooting position to get a shot away at Neuer. In the end, his shot was off balance, and Neuer did well to save it. Is it a red card? I have to double check what the rule change has been. Is it still the case that when you commit a foul in the box as the last man, that you concede a penalty, arguably then a goal, and a red card? Hasn't it been changed so that it's a yellow card now?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure either.
I have to double check that, so don't be quoting me. It was rash, but he was forced into that situation. But I think it was Antonio Rudiger who tried to dribble and lost possession. Was it Boateng in the first place?
No, it was Toni Kroos Toni Kroos turned the ball over that led to the goal. But yeah, I think you're right
And again, it seemed to come from a lack of composure. Whether that was a result of of Sebastian Rudi not being on the pitch at that point. Had he gone off by that point?
Yeah, he's gone.
Yeah. The composure seemed to go, and I'm not sure why Rudiger and Boateng seemed to think that gave them license to start advancing and into a more defensive midfield role when in possession. I'm not sure why they thought that was the case, but perhaps given that they lacked that number six in front of them, that's why they even subconsciously took it upon themselves to start playing the ball out more. There was a comment from the former England and United.
Yeah, Gary Lineker. I was just going to mention that.
Gary Neville said it.
Gary Neville. Yeah.
Gary Neville said it, saying, why does Johan Boateng think he's Franz Beckenbauer?
Yeah.
perhaps a slightly extreme comparison. But yeah, that's how it looks. But they weren't doing that with a proper number six in front of them, which shows how important that decision was from Joachim Löw to start Sebastian Rudi.
Well, obviously, I mean, Jerome Boateng is not going to start the next game because he's suspended. But this is the player that Jerome Boateng is. I've always seen him as somewhat undisciplined. And what's made him so good is that he can track down runners and he can go into those challenges and he can win the ball. He didn't on that occasion, and he should have gotten a red card. But I think he should have gotten a red card. But I don't think that he's going to change the player that he is now at 29 years old in a World Cup. I mean, say what you want, Gary Neville or whoever is criticizing for him for being so undisciplined in this game, but it was clear to me that he needed to be, and that's just the player that he is, and that's what the player that Joachim Löw expects him to be.
Given that it almost led to a goal and it almost had catastrophic consequences, is that not another argument to say this is Löw being too loyal to the types of player, the experienced players that have performed so well for him down the years, and not looking around at the alternative options that he has? I thought, on the whole, Antonio Rudiger did a fine job last night. I don't think anyone expected anything otherwise. Why shouldn't Niklas Süle have come in and started? I thought he was particularly impressive in that Champions League semi-final when he came on against Real Madrid. Not just the positioning, but the pace to recover if, for whatever reason, he finds himself out of position, and fantastic timing in the tackle as well. So I wouldn't be worried at all if someone like him was to come in against South Korea, who, from what I saw, have a bit of pace up front as well.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I do think that Löw is part of that old guard that Boateng is part of that old guard that Löw is committed to, but. Jerome Boateng could lose you a game like he almost did against Sweden, or almost didn't get the result that they needed. But he can also win you a game. I mean, he had that incredible goal line clearance against the Euros. That's the type of physical feats that he's capable of. And just because I don't know if Boateng and Rudiger are the best combination to start together, that might be a whole podcast in and of itself, but I do think.
Well, I think there's a set hierarchy, isn't there? That when Hummels is out, Rudiger is his replacement. When Boateng is out, Süle is his replacement. I think that's nailed on quite in quite a strict hierarchy. We all know Jerome Boateng's capabilities. No one's denying that he is, or at least has been, a fantastic defender for club and country. But when it comes to the crux of the matter in the tournament, where there is literally no space for errors, which he might cost you a game. Yeah, he bloody well might, and you might get knocked out of a World Cup in the group stage, and that's how close it's come. So I think.
But aren't there many defenders like that? I mean, couldn't one say make a similar argument for Sergio Ramos or Thiago Silva? Or I mean, there's plenty of very athletic, very prolific defenders that I think that could make a mistake in a crucial moment.
Yeah, of course. It's about getting that balance right between the experienced players that you know and that you trust from Lerv's point of view, and refreshing that and keeping them on the toes with the new generation of players coming through. And Lerv's only got to take a look at the effect that his changes had at the other end of the field. With the lack, okay, Royce isn't, we wouldn't say he's part of a new generation, but in terms of playing time at World Cups, he is. Mm-hmm. With the effect that the likes of Brandt, Werner, and Royce had on the game at the other end, just how influential a little bit more trust in the younger lads coming through can be as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this will definitely be a game. I mean, the next game will definitely be an interesting one for Nicolas Sulla, because he's impressed for Bayern and Germany in 2018 and even last year. So I mean if he does perform well, I mean maybe Liv thinks about it, but I still think that Jerome Boateng I think the hierarchy is still there, and I think Liv should stick to it. But let's get to the final game for Germany, because the group F is now completely wide open, because if Sweden beat Mexico, then Sweden will automatically be through. Mexico basically need a point against Sweden in order to confirm their final place in the last 16. But yeah, this win was so important for Germany, because they now just need a convincing win over South Korea, something that seems feasible considering what the results that Mexico and Sweden got against South Korea. And they're also not only through, but they still have a chance to win the group and knock Mexico out of the group stage. So do you still think that this is still in Germany's hands? Or,
well, it's not case of me thinking it is that the key to the result it's kept Germany's destiny in their own hands. Had they lost, they'd have been out. Had they drawn, they wouldn't have been quite out, but they would have been relying on results elsewhere. As it stands now, they know what the score is. They need to win by a higher margin than Sweden do. And I think that's certainly feasible. I don't think Sweden ultimately showed enough to pose such a huge threat to Mexico. On the other hand, Mexico are as good as through. You know, perhaps they'll make changes, perhaps not. But the key is that it's in Germany's hands now, and you would expect them. You expect them to beat South Korea. I only saw a little bit of the game yesterday between Mexico and South Korea. I thought the Koreans definitely posed Mexico a threat on the counter-attack a few times. Obviously, Son up front, plays Tottenham, offered a great outlet. But for the large part, they sat back quite rigidly and let Mexico come onto them. Mexico were quite fortunate to win a penalty in the first half and eventually break them down. So it's going to be another case of how it was for Germany against Sweden last night, of trying to find a way through a packed defence. The South Korean back line isn't as physically tall and imposing as Sweden last night.
Or Mexico.
So I can, again, as I said before, the Sweden game, I think I'd like to see Mario Gomez start. I just think he provides that completely different and an alternative method forward for Germany, opposed from the tiki-taka possession around the box. And we saw second half last night, I thought it worked well having those creative, penetrative players around the box, and Mario Gomez as your one sort of pivot in the middle there for when you do need to put balls in. I think that could work well against South Korea. And we've suddenly, in the space of 10, 12 hours, gone from Germany are going out following France, Italy and Spain as world champions, getting knocked out in the group stage, to absolute chaos at home, to suddenly it's all in Germany's hands. And if they go on to progress from the group and do well in the tournament, people will be talking about last night's result as that was the main changing point. So
that goal in particular. By the way, there was an interesting stat that I saw on that Toni Kroos goal, that it was the latest regulation time goal that Germany has ever scored in the World Cup, and boy, is it more important? It couldn't have been any more important. Besides Mario Gomez starting, do you think there are other changes that Löw needs to make in against South Korea, or is this something that he can basically see how the team's is progressing over the week and he can make his decisions before?
I think if you were being really, really critical, there'd be a shout to start Julian Brandt after his performances as a substitute in the two games so far. But the only player who could make way for him would be Thomas Müller. And as much as I don't think he's set the world alight so far, he's not going to lose his place, is he? And it's also not the sort of player that you would take out the starting lineup, given what he is capable of from a creative point of view. But no, as I said, I think I would definitely start Mario Gomez. And I was impressed to see Timo Werner in a slightly more, in a wider role, an area where he can really use his pace. I feel like if he's down the middle as your main striker, almost you're taking away his main weapon from him in these sort of games. His main weapon is his pace, his ability to beat men. He sits on the final shoulder on the last line of defence. When he's there on his own, that's almost taken away from him because he's not a target man. We saw last night that once he's moved out wide and had a little bit more space to run into, he posed a huge threat, and that could be key.
Yeah, that's a role that he's played for Stuttgart too. I mean, before he was playing in the middle for Leipzig, he came through with Stuttgart as a winger, and the only reason why he played as a striker for Stuttgart is because they literally didn't have anybody else. So I definitely think he's capable of playing that role. He showed that he was more than capable of playing that wide role last night, and I think that would also be another brave decision to drop someone, maybe even Julian Draxler, and playing Timo Werner on the left and from the start. Before we wrap up, is there any other non-Germany takeaways you've taken away from the group stage? Now, I mean, most of it has been laid out. Russia are through, Uruguay are through. Portugal and Spain still have to be shaking in their boots. Croatia is through. Argentina could be knocked out. Is there one team that you would like to see make the knockout stages, maybe?
Like I said last time, I think I've been impressed with how Russia have started, and I think it's good that Russia have gone through, because I think a tournament always needs the host nation to do well. It's been interesting to see how, despite not playing well, France and Brazil have dug out results. I didn't see it coming for Brazil against Costa Rica. I really didn't think it would come. I thought some of Neymar's play acting was pretty disgraceful, to be honest. And that's he let himself down slightly with all that, just because things weren't going his way. Belgium have been the standout so far, haven't they? Not just beating teams they're expected to beat, but beating them in style. Hazard scoring goals, Lukaku scoring goals, Kevin De Bruyne behind them, spreading the passes that he does is absolute joy to watch. Some of the difficulties that England had in the second half, getting through Tunisia, and in the end it was some poor defending which left Harry Kane unmarked at the far post, which got them the goal. What did Belgium do? Scored five against them. So yeah, very impressive to watch. And we've been saying for the past two or three tournaments, haven't we? Oh, Belgium are everyone's dark horses, but they've never quite made it. Yeah, they're fun to watch this year. Outstanding talents, scoring goals, and I think England have got a game on their hands when they play them. They've been most impressive for me so far.
All right, that'll do it for now. Remember, we'll be doing a podcast after every Germany game, all the way through the World Cup final, if they make it that far. So be sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. You can find Matt Ford on Twitter at Matt_4D, and I'm at Davis_Vinatra. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the last round of the group stage, and we'll be back soon.